Hello, good morning and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg and this is your Friday episode of the Biz News Briefing. Some breaking news this morning. Very bad news for Johannesburg. Eskom wants to cut off the electricity in a month's time. We'll have more of that in a moment. Lots more in the show today, picking up on the best and the worst reactions to the share price news that came out yesterday. And we'll also have Magnus Haystack to guide us through. Thank you, Rob Hirsov. Bonjour, tribe. Bonjour back, Rob. Good to have you with us as always. This is the Biz News Briefing. Let's go to our partners in New York for the news headlines.
The Fed once again lowered interest rates, this time by 25 basis points. Here's Fed Chair Jay Powell.
At today's meeting, the committee decided to lower the target range for the federal funds rate by a quarter percentage point to 4.5% to 4.75%. This further recalibration of our policy stance will help maintain the strength of the economy and the labor market and will continue to enable further progress on inflation as we move toward a more neutral stance over time.
Now, during his press conference, Powell shot down any possibility of President-elect Trump removing Powell from his post. Here's an exchange between Powell and a reporter.
Some of the president-elect's advisors have suggested that you should resign. If he asked you to leave, would you go?
No.
Can you follow up on, do you think that legally you're not required to leave?
No.
Powell went on to say the U.S. presidential election will have no effects on Fed decision-making in the near term, and he said it's simply too early to know the timing or substance of any potential fiscal policy changes. President-elect Trump has named Susie Wiles as White House Chief of Staff. The veteran Republican political operative will be the first ever female in that role, holding considerable power over operations in the West Wing. We go to global reaction to the Trump victory. President Vladimir Putin congratulating Mr. Trump today. Now, Trump has been critical of U.S. aid to Ukraine, and he claimed he would end the war as soon as he entered office. Here's Putin through an interpreter saying that Trump's proposals on Ukraine deserve attention.
I do not want to comment now on what was said consciously during the election campaign. I think it was said deliberately in the fight for votes. But it does not matter. What was said in the desire to restore relations with Russia to help end the Ukrainian crisis, in my opinion, seems to deserve at least attention. I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate him.
That is Russian President Vladimir Putin through a translator. Even so, Russian officials are uncertain about Trump's victory. Some fear his unpredictability, while others predict indirect consequences, such as a drop in oil prices. Sticking with politics, we go to Pennsylvania and Republican Dave McCormick defeating incumbent U.S. Senator Bob Casey. Bloomberg's Wendy Benjaminson tells us what this means for the Republican Party.
This gives Republicans a 53 right now, a 53 seat majority in the Senate, which means that certainly Trump will have very little trouble getting his nominees confirmed.
That is Bloomberg's Wendy Benjaminson in Washington. By the way, control of the House of Representatives has yet to be decided. On to President-elect Trump's impact on U.S. business. Here's Kathy Wood, CEO and CIO of ARK Invest. She says too much regulation is stifling companies from going public.
The regulatory nightmare of being a public company has kept people, leaders of companies basically saying, if I don't have to go public, I am not going public. And so I think we're going to see a lot more work in that regard to give, you know, the average investor a shot at some of these moonshots.
That is Kathy Wood, CIO and CEO of ARK Invest.
Well, the news here in South Africa is not very good for people in Johannesburg. This morning, there was a statement issued, a media statement, well, it issued last night, the media statement, and then an update from Eskom. It says that the city of Johannesburg owes Eskom around $6 billion, and as a consequence of this, on the 14th of December, Eskom intends cutting off the electricity from the residents of Johannesburg. We will be talking in just a moment to Wayne Duvenage. Before that, though, Wayne is the CEO of Outer. Before that, the major moves internationally on the markets overnight. The U.S. market continues to go forward. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 index bumping up well. Bitcoin was 1.6% higher as well. That's sitting at just under $76,000. And those BizNews portfolio stocks that have done so well in the past week are not falling anywhere yet. Tesla 3% better, Nvidia 2% better, Amazon and Microsoft both 1.5% higher. Well, let's look at South Africa and their resources. After a pretty ugly day yesterday, they regained quite a lot of that strength. The rand has got pretty strong in the last 24 hours, 21 cent gain against both the US dollar and against the pound. And Sappi was the big surprise on the earnings side yesterday, 9% increase in that share price. I did speak to Steve Binney, the chief executive. We'll have a clip of that for you. If you want more details, you can go onto the BizNews TV site and watch or listen to it on BizNews Radio. And Truworths, on the other hand, also brought out an operating update. That was the biggest loser of the major stocks. That was down 6%. Again, we have in this program today a discussion with the CEO, Michael Mark. Let's bring in Wayne Duvenage now. He is the chief executive of Outer and the man who, as earlier in the week, told us about the issues that were going on in electricity and water. Wayne, I guess none of us could predict this move by Eskom, but now they're threatening to cut off the power for the city of Johannesburg.
Yeah, and it's been coming for some time now, Alec. It was last year that, I think in October, that city of Joburg defaulted in its payments to Eskom. And by, I think, the first 3 months of this year, that had run up to over R1 billion. Eskom went to court. The court compelled the city to pay. Then the city brought about an argument, I think, that, you know, said that Eskom had been overcharging them and they had a counterclaim of over R3 billion, and that was thrown out by the courts. Now we sit close to R5 billion owed by the city, and I think Eskom have had enough. And as we spoke recently, you know, Eskom has its own problems, and one of them is this defaulting of municipalities. And when a city like Johannesburg doesn't pay its bills, then we know that city is in big trouble. I mean, they're taking the money from you and I, the residents and businesses in the city, and marking it up, and then not paying their share over to Eskom. And that is the sign of a city that has been poorly managed. It has been for a number of years now, and something has to happen because we cannot continue in this economic hub with this kind of behavior by our city management.
Why now, Wayne? Why would Eskom take this step now?
I guess, you know, it's they've got to be careful not to allow this debt to spiral out of control. If they do, as we know, there are, I think it's over R50 billion that is owed by various municipalities, but probably a lot more, my last recollection of that amount. And I guess, like any debt collection process, you have to be stern on your customers. And if you don't take this hard action, then it just continues to ramp up. So you know, if I was sitting in Eskom's shoes, I'd have done this a long time ago. I'd have done it a long time ago to many of the municipalities, because they need to feel the pain. The public need to feel the pain, so that when it comes time to vote, you start thinking, how are we going to continue to keep people who mismanage our funds in power in this city? And that's really what it comes down to. You've got to be cruel to be kind to fix this long-term problem. And I think Eskom have said enough. It's going into the summer season now. And I guess the city now has to answer to its people. What are you doing about resolving this problem? And if the city of Joburg doesn't convince the people, it's going to start making organizations like ourselves thinking, well, what do we have to do? Maybe we have to start taking drastic steps to have this council disbanded. Maybe we have to go to court and show the courts how badly managed the city is, not just in electricity payments, road infrastructure, water leaks. It's not that the city can't do this. Recently, they took out a R2.5 billion to deal with infrastructure matters, and we don't see anything happening. And you can bet your bottom dollar, Alec, They're going to pay themselves fat bonuses in time for Christmas. This is not how you run a city. And we really have to take drastic steps as the people, as civil society, to send a strong message now to the authorities. We cannot take this anymore.
The ANC at head office, if you like, nationally, is not very happy with the ANC in Gauteng. But up to this period, the ANC in Gauteng have just told the national guys to get lost. The fact that the government is the shareholder in Eskom suggests there might be something else happening behind the scenes. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I think the message is being sent out pretty clearly from the powers that be, that we're going to have to deal with this this debt, because Eskom is being bailed out by National Treasury now. And the I think the signals are very strong. And the sad thing is that the Gauteng province, who is the province that has to put Joburg or city like Joburg under administration, if it is going to do so, is probably going to be very reluctant to do so. There is this marriage, this relationship between the city of Joburg management and the provincial management that is not a healthy one. So, I think this could be a very clear indication that the powers at the top are now starting to turn the screws.
You know, the thing that really, I suppose, bemuses me is you've got a former chairman of the Free Market Foundation in Herman Mashaba who knows all of this, and yet he's given support to the council that has been overspending to the degree that Eskom is now saying, well, we've had enough, we're going to cut your electricity off. And that means that Joburg won't go through load shedding. It'll go through no electricity whatsoever if Eskom continues along this line. And yet, in politics, it seems as though power over or supersedes, especially in Mashaba's case, supersedes common sense. And you'd think it would be much better from his side. So it's not just the local governors who are going to be getting a hiding in the next local election. But that's in 2026. What happens between now and then?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It is sad, and you're quite right. Our politicians have really let us down with this musical chairs of mayors, swings and roundabouts, temporary mayors totally out of their depth, Marrera out of his depth. The city cannot collect its own debt from its own residents. There's just so much that's going wrong. And you would think that Action SA, who do wield some kingmaker decisions here, would have taken the right decisions. But again, sadly, politics gets in the way. Power just blinds people from their responsibilities to the people or to the public and not to their own parties. And I guess this is going to show up in the next elections. Yes, it is 2 years away, November 2026. A lot has to be done between now and then. We can't wait until then. And as I was saying, it's now time for civil society to ramp up its frustration and do in a responsible way, start tackling these issues with the council. There are a lot of entities and organizations that are at their wits' end now. And I think this will see the culmination of a coordinated strategy by civil society to take on the city.
Wayne Duvenage is the chief executive of OUTA, the organization opposing tax abuse. And my goodness, is there tax abuse in dollops here in the city of Johannesburg. Eskom is moving forward in a way that none would have imagined just a little while ago. Let's pick up on that promised interview with the chief executive of SAPI. It's a short clip from that discussion. It's a company that many South Africans know. Yesterday, their financial results came out for the last 3 months of their financial year. They were far better than anticipated. But I think the exciting thing for SAPI shareholders, who've already seen a 9% jump in the share price yesterday, is that it looks like things are going to be even better going ahead. Let's have a look at that clip. If it were, let's just imagine a fully efficient Transnet. How much impact would that have on your business relative to where you are today?
That's a good question, Alec. There's some things that are going to take longer to fix. I'll give you an example. We remember when there was the floods a year or two back in KwaZulu-Natal, some of the rail bridges, one specifically south of Durban, was washed away, and they haven't fixed that. We've been told it's going to be fixed next year sometime. We're still moving the vast majority of our product via road, which is inefficient, but it would run into, it would run into hundreds of millions of rands for us.
And then geopolitics globally, we're talking the day after Donald Trump has, his opponent conceded that Trump has won the presidency in the United States. Is this something that concerns you?
Look, Alec, we're obviously still assessing, and we have to see how much was rhetoric and how much actually will change. But the one positive for us, what I would say to you, is that we don't really export from South Africa to the U.S. We have an American domestic capacity, and we make our product in the U.S. So as a domestic manufacturer, ironically, when you hear that the Trump administration may do more to support domestic manufacturers, we would see that as a positive. And ironically, we compete against other importers into the U.S. from Asia and China and other jurisdictions as well. So we actually may benefit from tariffs if they were to be introduced. So we have to see what happens, but I don't think there will be a significant negative impact on SAPI.
So there's really three South African companies in that league. Sasol, who've got a big plant in Lake Charles. Also, clearly yourselves as well. And then Sibanye-Stillwater, who've got the huge palladium operation. So interestingly enough, every side of the coin, there's pleases somebody, whichever way it lands. Just looking ahead, though, Steve, the geopolitical challenges around the world, and you being such an important, or exports being so important to SAPI, are there things that keep you awake at night as a consequence of this?
Mm. Yeah, our biggest concern at the moment is Europe. We're also a big manufacturer in Europe. And unfortunately, with the Ukraine war, that's pushed up energy prices and the prices of other raw materials. So our cost base in Europe is not as efficient as it was pre-COVID. And you add that to the fact that the European, and as you know this, the European economy has been very sluggish in the last couple of years, particularly like a place like Germany, which is a huge market for us. So those macro geopolitical challenges in Europe have been particularly challenging. And, coming back to your question on Trump, we're not sure what's going to happen with Ukraine and what that may mean for energy prices and the like. So that's probably my most immediate concern at the moment.
And looking ahead, the stuff you can control operationally?
Yeah, we're feeling good. We put out a positive outlook statement for 2025. Volumes continue to pick up. I'm optimistic because global interest rates are coming down. The consumers, whilst they're still stretched, I firmly believe that things will get better. And we're seeing these stimulus packages out of China that can also benefit us as well. So whilst I don't think it's going to be a sharp recovery in the global economy, I'm more optimistic that 25 will be better than 24.
Isn't that nice news to have from a chief executive of a company? Next year will be even better. So it looks like SAPI is on its way back. Catch up with another chief executive. And this time, the CEO is from Truworths. I really enjoyed this conversation. Michael Mark has been running the company for more than 30 years. So if you want to talk about a man who knows his way around the retailing industry, this is a really tough industry. Well, then Michael is your man. Listen carefully, particularly towards the end of this conversation or this clip that we've taken out. The full interview is on BizNews TV, where you'll get some insights into the wisdom that comes with running a major organization like this for so long. Let's move in then to that clip with Michael Marx, CEO of Truworths. All the many years of your experience on how long it might take before this does start, or the better mood does start kicking through.
Well, I'm going to answer you in a strange way, but this, I think, reflects the answer. Our sales plans for the year of 2025 are significantly more optimistic than we've achieved. So we are hoping and anticipating an improvement. My experience tells me, don't expect anything sudden. It's not likely. Acknowledging our base is lower, and it does seem to be improvement. Our credit book is looking healthier. There are turnaround signs, but my experience tells me it will be steady and not dramatic, but a nice steady improvement. And I'm hoping, especially summer 25, from about July, August, September onwards, things should be much better, a much lower base, a much improved economy, I'm hoping. And we have done many things internally that we think could be quite, let's say, exciting. You know, we've got a new distribution center that comes on stream in February, been 3 years being built. That's bringing in a lot of change in our business and our ability to execute better. So there's a lot of things happening internally that make me feel, plus the economic macro situation, more positive, particularly about summer 25 onwards.
So that's for your business, for Truworths. But if you were talking to an entrepreneur who's been just hanging in there and has been hoping after the election, okay, now, as you said earlier, people believe that when there's a change for the better, it's going to happen immediate. Of course, it doesn't. It takes a while to come through. Would you be saying the same thing to them? Just hang in there for summer 2025. Things will be better by then?
No, I'd be saying to them, make sure that, because you can't tell, things happen. I mean, Alec, you've been around as long as me. It never happens the way you think. So, yes, we're feeling more positive, but suddenly there's a new administration in the United States. What's going to happen? I don't know. Are there going to be less wars, more wars? Things are unpredictable about the future. Therefore, if I was talking to a young entrepreneur, I'd say, just make sure your business is a solid one. If you're in financial difficulty and trouble, don't expect the economy to suddenly save you. It's not likely. It may happen and you might get lucky. But the truth is, you've got to run a business without relying on the economy booming. You've got to run a business that can survive, albeit struggle like Truworths has in tough times. You have to. You do get COVIDs. You get things that go wrong. And you haven't got a strong balance sheet and you haven't got good cash flow and you're already struggling, you have to find a solution. And it's got to be an internal one. It can't be the economy will save me. It might, but you can't depend on that.
Fabulous insights there from Michael Mark. And the market or investors had anticipated a little more than what they got from Truworths. And as a result of that, when that business update came, the share price down by 6%. Magnus Haystack does indeed join us now. Magnus, that's not unusual, is it, for the market to exaggerate its anticipation one way or the other?
That's quite correct. Good morning, Alec. Yeah, market can expect more or sometimes expect less. And then there's a quick flurry of positions. Guys who were long go short or get out of the stock or vice versa. It sometimes confuses ordinary investors when a company comes out with good results and then the share price goes down. And often the answer is the market was expecting more. In terms of profits. So sometimes the market runs ahead of itself and then it settles down. It's always interesting to see how the market reacts to profit numbers, especially highly traded shares where there's, you know, you can get in and out very, very quickly.
Well, you have been following the United States story for a long time now, and the impact of the Donald Trump victory has had a very big positive effect on American stocks. Is this something that the market is overdone yet, or do you think it might just be the beginning?
You know, if you ask 10 analysts in one room that question, you're going to get 12 opinions at the moment. The market, you know, is very frothy at the moment. It has done exceptionally well, and some of these stocks have just done unbelievably well. I mean, if you look at Nvidia and even Tesla, I looked at Tesla, was $150 as recently as April. And you remember at the business conference, there were questions about Tesla. Well, there you have Tesla at $290, you know, 4 or 5 months later. It's almost doubled in market value. So Elon Musk has been a major beneficiary of this outcome and him backing the right horse. So there's more to come from Elon. So that's quite an interesting side story. The markets in the short term, I think, is a little bit frothy. But, you know, with the Magnificent Seven, that rally is just carrying on like you cannot believe it. We're seeing enormous wealth being created. And, you know, if you've got into that market, it's not the time to be getting out. If you're not in the market yet, there might be a better entry point sometime later. But it has been quite a phenomenal bull market. Probably the likes that we haven't seen in many, many years in stock markets. And for those investors who are in, just enjoy the ride.
Magnus, let's have a listen now to a clip of an interview that I had yesterday with Anthony Ginsberg. You know Anthony Ginsberg well. He's a South African. He's based in Los Angeles. He's a bit of a globetrotter, is our Anthony. And he was in London yesterday. Earlier in the week, we spoke to him from LA. He's been helping us with the American insights on the Trump or the US election. And he had some very interesting things to say. Let's pick up now with Anthony. You follow, being a fellow South African, Elon Musk, very closely, lives in California where you live. At the last election, he gave a lot of money to Joe Biden and was very supportive of him, and he switched completely away from Biden to Trump. What was behind that?
Well, Elon's going to most likely become the efficiency czar, we call it, in Washington, D.C. He wants to actually help Trump slice out of a $6 trillion U.S. federal annual budget. He wants to try and slice at least $1 to $2 trillion out of that. I believe there'll be more outsourcing, and Elon will benefit both SpaceX as well as you know, his other companies, obviously Tesla as well. But he'll be able to get more outsourcing in AI, in cyber. NASA's doing more outsourcing with rocket boosters as well. So that's what's in it for Elon, that he'll get potentially more subsidies as well on EV cars. His Starlink's also being fated by Trump as helping during the recent hurricanes. So I think that he'll be an important player going forward to try and reduce the size of government. I mean, Trump is, he talks about Reagan as his hero when he thinks about other Republicans. He doesn't talk about the Bushes, but he goes back to Reagan. He says cutting the size of government is one of his key features. So I think Elon saw that, and a lot of the Silicon Valley folks, frankly, have been fed up, not just with the Federal Trade Commission and the antitrust regulations, but just the aggressiveness. They were taking these guys to court. There have been massive amounts of litigation against the big tech firms in particular, but not just them. Some media companies have also had mergers blocked. So it's been somewhat anti-business, frankly, and this has been an overhang on the markets. Although, yes, we're up over 20% on the S&P this year, we expect with the tailwinds next year, as you know, we've got tomorrow, your time, there will be a Federal Reserve 25 basis point rate cut. There'll be another one in December, 25 basis points. And Trump is pushing to have another 3 to 4 Federal Reserve rate cuts next year. So we see a good tailwind for stocks going forward, Adam.
And this big bump that we've seen already, after it became apparent that Trump would win, and then when it was confirmed, You said that this is unlikely to be a relief rally. Are you suggesting that this could be the beginning of a renewed bull market?
Yes, because the earnings actually that it came out when you and I discussed it a week ago, that they did actually beat most of the earning expectations, but there was this overhang that some of them have still got antitrust lawsuits. The other issue is the fourth quarter numbers are looking pretty solid, double-digit earnings growth as well. And then you add the tailwinds of lower interest rates next year and less red tape, less regulation, the freeing up of M&A. That's why the Russell 2000 is something key to watch. Those are the small cap, purely U.S. domestic stocks. That thing almost hit with 5.8% yesterday. That's a very important bellwether to look at because, frankly, they benefit the most from lower interest rates as well and less red tape, less compliance. They don't have armies of lawyers and smaller cap companies. So, yes, we believe 2025 will be a very good year for the equity market here.
So that's Anthony Ginsberg talking to us yesterday from London. Magnus, he's very bullish. Eh? He reckons it's only just begun this. And I'm sure those who missed out on the bull run thus far in U.S. tech stocks are listening to him and thinking, well, maybe I can buy.
Yeah, Alec, Anthony is, of course, a very, very astute commentator on the markets. And I must make a disclaimer. We use him as one of our partners, especially to give our clients exposure to the broad technology market. He runs a couple of very, very good funds, and it's the cheapest and easiest way to get into the technology sector. And those funds are doing extremely well. And as Anthony has said, this is driven by earnings. The previous dot-com bubble, there was just absolutely no earnings. The stock market went through the roof, and it all collapsed into a heap. This time is different. Those companies are making serious money, serious cash flow, and they're even starting to pay dividends. So I think there is substance in the market. And I think with interest rates coming down, it is still, you should have technology in your portfolio as a South African, because we don't have any major technology company apart from maybe Naspers. But if you want a broad-based index-linked fund, I mean, the megatrend funds Anthony runs is a fantastic vehicle to get into it.
Just to pick up on something that he said, and I had the same conversation with Corky Koyman earlier this week. With the Biden administration, they were, as Corky actually described it really well, he said they were there to protect people. But it doesn't. The world doesn't work like that. You can't protect people. You should give people freedom to develop, to grow. That was Corky's view. And in this protection of people, what the Biden administration did was they blocked a heck of a lot of mergers and acquisitions in the thought that you can't let the big companies get bigger. Of course, the counter argument to that is if you block these mergers, then the small companies aren't going to attract capital because nobody can see an exit. Now, what Anthony's saying, and has said it now twice, is that there are many of these acquisitions waiting to happen in companies or for companies that have got to a point that have been blocked by the Biden administration. Now that Trump's there, capitalism will flow because those blockages will be taken out the way. And as Anthony was suggesting, this could give the market another boost that we never even thought about. What is your thought on that?
You know, that's a very, very interesting comment that you've just made, and it's 100% correct. In other fields, we picked up that a lot of these deals that normally happen in the market, in private equity, that eventually leads to a listing on the markets in the American market, have been blocked for a number of reasons, and one of them is regulatory involvement or regulatory intervention by the governments. You know, when a government wants to protect people, it just means more government, more rules. And if that can be broken, and I think that's what Elon is going to do there, I think there's going to be a raft of mergers and acquisitions and companies getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, America still is the centerpiece of, you know, innovation in companies and new technologies and new inventions. So as I'm saying, you know, it is not the time to be scared and get out of the market. We often reflect back in time on company shares where we should have stayed in, like Capitec and like ShopRite. But, you know, we must be careful not to get out too soon. There's still a heck of a lot of mileage in this bull market.
It's an interesting point you make there as well on the BizNews portfolio, is knowing that some of our tribe were getting terribly nervous by the surges in the NVIDIA and in particular the Palantir share prices, which are now up about 500% from where we bought them in the last couple of years. What we did there was we sold half of the stock and then said, well, just we're in for nothing. We've already paid ourselves. We've got a good capital gain. Just let the other 50% roll. And indeed, that has been a good strategy. But Magnus, we're going to go to London now, because here's an interesting point. The South Africans in the city of London are really doing big things, and they don't always get the recognition that they deserve. That changed this week when the Lord Mayor of London identified two South Africans for a very special honour. I know that this is not the normal area that we go into, but as one of those South Africans is a business leader from this country and well-known in this country, I thought that it would be a good idea to get hold of the Lord Mayor of London. His name is Lord Michael Mainelli, and to ask him a little about this and about this honour, just to remind you that at about quarter two, we're going to be picking up on a different subject entirely. It's with Rory Steyn, who is a member of the Comrades Marathon Association. We'll be talking about that. And he's the father of Kyle Steyn, who's the captain and a Scottish international player. He's injured at the moment. But if anybody's got insight into what's going to happen between Scotland and the Springboks, well, we think Rory is there. So we've got a double a discussion with him, and I'm sure Magnus and I'll have a bit of fun with Rory as well. But let's kick off now with the Lord Mayor of London, Lord Michael Mainelli.
Sharon Constance and I have been friends for years, and she has been a tireless supporter of the connections between the City of London and South Africa in its widest sense, but also very much on trade and also very much on politics. And to be fair, it was she who suggested we honored two South Africans, and I was delighted to support her.
Let's talk about them. Ruth Lees, who is the CEO of Investec PLC, one of only nine female chief executives on the FTSE 250. She is a South African. She moved over to the UK 22 years ago. Why did you decide that she was a worthy candidate for the freedom of the City of London?
Well, we've known Ruth for a long time, obviously, but what distinguishes her isn't her gender. What distinguishes her is that she's been completely dedicated to diversity, inclusion at Investec, and belonging very much in our city community. I believe Investec is now about 50 years old, but it came to the city, from memory, about 30 years ago. And I and many others have long admired this immense contribution South Africa has made to our financial community, most importantly by driving trade across Africa itself, and you know, South Africa, Southern Africa, and the totality of Sub-Saharan Africa. Investec is widely seen here in the City of London as a powerhouse, and so we were thrilled to welcome both Ruth and Kingsley Mamabolo as citizens of London for their work with the city over the years and the fact that they have been passionate about keeping us connected with South Africa.
The High Commissioner Kingsley Mamabolo, who you mentioned just a moment ago, and he's a career diplomat. What was it that qualified him?
Well, we in the City of London for centuries, you know, we're the world's oldest continuous democratic workers and residents cooperative. We date back to roughly the middle of the 7th century. So we're just short of 1,400 years old. What's that got to do with Kingsley? Well, Kingsley, of course, looks at the world. He was the ambassador to the UN. He chaired the group of 77. He's been ambassador to the African Union. You know, he is just passionate about diplomacy and geopolitics, and he sees diplomacy as a force for good. Well, we in the City of London over those 14 centuries have evolved a strategy which I've boiled down to four points. We care very, very much about defense and security. Nobody brings money or trades to a war zone. We care extremely highly about free trade and open markets, which Kingsley exemplifies. We care very much about access to talent and skills. And finally, the rule of law in its widest sense. You know, here in the City of London, we like to pride ourselves on trying to treat all comers fairly, which, of course, speaks to Kingsley's diplomatic background. And we also believe, as does Kingsley, in dictum meum pactum, which is Latin for my word is my bond, which is really the unofficial motto of the city, which you'll see everywhere adopted by many, many firms who work here.
The Deputy President of South Africa, Paul Mashatile, was in London in October. The feedback we got from our partners at the Financial Times was that he made quite a good impression. Did you manage to sit in on any of those conversations?
I didn't sit in on those conversations, but in fact, my team did. And yes, there was great excitement. I mean, in fact, funnily enough, Nelson Mandela got the freedom of the city here in 1996, I think it was, so almost 30 years ago. In fact, funnily enough, Nelson Mandela stayed here at Mansion House, the great big mansion in the center of London, in which I live, and he was playing with his with kids in the great state bedroom number one with red curtains. We had to drag him away from the children to come down and play with the adults. He was a wonderful man. It is a special thing. But, we really had a good visit last month as well. And I think there's just a lot of excitement about Africa in general, sub-Saharan Africa, and the potential there, whether it's hydrogen, whether it's infrastructure, whatever. We had a session yesterday on which we call a coffee colloquy, where we assemble about 100 people around a topic. And yesterday it was about hydrogen, and it just repeatedly came up. Projects in Mozambique and Namibia, everybody's excited. But, if South Africa isn't the gateway to sub-Saharan Africa, I don't know what is. And therefore, we see you as very much our gateway to a continent that's rising in importance and that we hope develops rapidly and develops through the better of its peoples.
Wow, isn't that interesting? Well, Magnus Haystack, I guess from your perspective, it's always nice to see South Africans being honoured, but the Lord Mayor of London told me that in his term, they have a one-year term, he has only given this honour to 10 people. So quite an honour then. And well done to the UK Chamber of Business South Africa and Sharon Constantian, who's the CEO there, who pushed for this recognition. Well, Magnus, we're going to be bringing Rory Steyn. In fact, he's there. Rory is with us. Rory, nice to have you today. We're going to kind of change the pace a little bit. And before we start, maybe Mr. Haystack can give us his forecast on what's going to happen with the Springboks in Scotland. Give us a result there, Magnus.
You're putting me on the spot, but, I have to go for the Bucks. The Bucks are in great shape, and I think that they will, unfortunately, for your guests, I think that the Scots were going to come second best on Sunday.
Okay, but how many points? Rob Hursov, I see, has just posted on our screen here from backstage. 20, he's at 15. 15.
Mm-hmm. No, 27-12 sounds good to me.
That's 15. So both you and Rob are the same?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I thought he said 50.
No,
27-12. I think on current form, that's about a good outcome.
Well, Rory, we do have a prediction model that BizNews Premium subscribers are busy with. And on that one, I've got the Scots losing, but not by much. What's given your affection for the team and inside knowledge, is it going to be a really tough game?
I think it's going to be a very tough first half, Elika. I think I'm expecting it to go much along the lines of what happened at the World Cup, where the Scots were within 3 points at halftime. But the strength of that South African bench is always going to tell, I believe. So I've gone on our predictor, on the BizNews Sports predictor, I've gone the Bucks by 10.
Okay, so a little bit more conservative than Rob Hursov and Magnus Haystack, but definitely still the Bucks to win. We'll talk a bit more about rugby in a moment, but One of the other reason why I asked you to come on this morning is the Comrades Marathon. We followed that story some months ago, where there were special meetings, and thank you for sharing the photographs at the time, and the whole BizNews tribe got into this in a big way, and were very upset that the Comrades Marathon was appearing to have been hijacked by nefarious interests. Can you just give us a little bit of background on what has happened since then?
Yes, certainly. So since that special general meeting, when Comrades members had kind of said, okay, we've had enough now, and we need to get a board in place that will take the Comrades Marathon forward. Alec, the big thing is that in 2 years' time, the 2027 running of the Comrades Marathon will be the 100th edition. So it began in 1921 with a returning World War I veteran wanting to establish a physical challenge that would be tough enough to honor his comrades that fell in the Great War. So it's a marathon that has a lot of history, a lot of ethos, fantastic values, and it honors those men and women who gave their lives. Now, COVID and the Second World War prevented the running of the race for some of those years. So 2027 is the 100th running of the Comrades Marathon. And it's really being run along amateur lines, Alec. It's a wonderful property. It's the greatest ultra marathon in the world. We need to modernize it. We need to get proper commercial rights in place. We need people that are really up with the latest technology, community involvement, major sports event management processes. We need that kind of expertise now to step in, and not just for 2027, but may 2027 be the starting point that takes the Comrades Marathon really forward into what it where it should be amongst the world's great races. You know, some of the people that we've been speaking to since that special general meeting are saying that, you know, you look at the London Marathon, the New York Marathon, Berlin, Tokyo, and now Sydney has just joined the Abbott's World Marathon Majors. Those races, the preparation for, you know, the one race starts 18 months before, so 6 months before you even run this year's version, you're planning next year already. And that's where we need to take comrades. It's too special a South African treasure for that not to happen. I mean, 20,000 people enter that race every year. Other ultra marathons get a field of a few hundred, you know, and it's just too important. So what have we done? So a group of people came together after that special general meeting, and we've called ourselves the Comrades Collective. I've just sent you a press release that went out either late last night or early this morning, where we are saying that we're putting forward a certain number of candidates. We have got 10 in the collective. They're on 7 board positions of the 9 board positions up for election at the AGM on the 30th of November, Alec. And we would like the BizNews tribe and all of your good forces to spread that word far and wide, that we now have online voting and online attendance of the AGM. And we just want to vote people in who have the interests of that great race at heart, not their own interests. We don't say that everybody involved on the Comrades board or with the staff of the Comrades Marathon Association, we're not saying that they're all bad apples, but we are saying that there are some bad apples and they need to go. And we need to vote in people that want nothing other than to serve that race and work with the good people in the Comrades Marathon Association on its board, its staff, and its volunteers, and say, guys, let's take hands. We've got only 2 years until the 100th edition, and we want a proper board in place with proper expertise to take this race to where it should be. We want to professionalize it, and we want it to continue to be, the greatest ultramarathon in the world. And a day, Alec, you know, I've run 12 of those things. I cannot tell you, it's like what the Springbok team has done for our country over the past 6 or 7 years. That day, the whole day, you experience that. It is South Africa at her finest, where status, class, wealth, skin color, religion, None of that matters. You're on the road with 20,000 other people, and the man next to you or the woman on the other side of you is as tired and as exhausted as you are, but you get this thing done together. And it is an incredible celebration of who we are as South Africa. And that needs to continue.
Now, Rory, the tribe know you as being Nelson Mandela's bodyguard. And then what they don't know is that you have a global business, a multinational business. And that multinational business does do a lot of work in sport. So I'm sure you've got insights that you could support here, the Comrades Collective. Are you standing for election as well to the board?
I am, Alec. You know, our business is where it is at the moment. We have a young CEO that has the energy that I had 20 years ago, who runs the business on a day-to-day basis. I'm still involved in the business. I have the network. I do business development, and I have the client base. But I also have a little bit more time now. And if there's anything that I can do, I'm certainly not, you know, the business mind, you know, that can crunch numbers and sign commercial rights and all that sort of thing, although I understand commercial rights. But if there's any contribution that I can make, and safety and security is obviously a concern, but just from, you know, a board is kind of the protector of whatever property they are the board of. And if I can contribute in any way to that, Alec, my concern truly is the values, the history, the genesis, the ethos of the Comrades Marathon. That's hugely important to me. And if I can make a contribution, I would love to do that. So I have put my hand up, and if you look on that that list of nominees, I am one of them because a number of people approached me. I think I was proposed by none other than the Comrades King himself. So Fordyce, his signature is on the form proposing my board membership. And if I can contribute, I would love to, Alec, because it's too important for me that race fails in any way, shape, or form.
Well, you've got a bit of good news. Rob Hersoff says he will help as well if needed. Magnus, is this a challenge for... Challenge for you and I to get into shape and to actually run next year? Magnus, fortunately we muted Rory there, but he said something about every South African should participate at some point.
Yeah, should run Comrades at least once in their lifetime.
Okay.
And it's a goal to strive for. If you can't run it, you know, become a volunteer. Volunteer your time. It's an incredible day out, honestly. In one of the most beautiful parts of our country. You know, that route through the Valley of a Thousand Hills takes your breath away.
Oh, KZN is magnificent as a banana boy.
It is magnificent.
You know, I understand that. But, okay, so let's move on to rugby now, because this is something that's imminent, more than the 100th yes. anniversary. How did Kyle, your son, who's a brilliant player, end up playing for the Glasgow Warriors, where he was the captain, I see, until he got injured, and for Scotland? Why didn't he come and play for the Boks?
Well, he could have played for either, but the reason he plays now for Glasgow Warriors in Scotland is because I married well. So my wife Jill was born in Scotland, in Glasgow, in the 60s, and she came to South Africa when her father, a civil engineer, immigrated when South Africa needed professional skills. You know, he put his hand up. He had, at that stage, two young daughters, got on a boat, came out here, lived in Hillbrow, as most immigrants did, and had a further two daughters here. So my wife is the second born of two girls, but having been born in Scotland, she and all three of our boys have British as well as South African citizenship. Kyle then went to school in Joburg, not a school with any rugby legacy or history, but he absolutely loved the game. And he said to us, he got a good matric. He said to us, Mom and Dad, I want to go to Stellenbosch University. So we said, well, what are you going to study? He said, I don't know, and it doesn't matter. I want to play rugby. It's the best rugby university in the country. He went there from this unknown little English private school in Joburg, standing there with all the Paul Roos Gymnasium and the great college Craven Week players and the Paul Boys High and Paul Gym. And he said, I'm going to make that side. He did. He made the varsity cup side. He made the first team. And then his coach at the time said, I need you for one more season. And he was doing a second postgraduate degree when that same coach called him and said, look, I've got a call from the coach of Griekwas down the road. They need a 13 who can cover wing and fullback, and they need an eighth man who can cover seven flank. And he called these two boys in, both of them English-speaking, and they both said yes, and they went down to Griekwas. So Kyle played two seasons for Griekwaland West, or Griekwas, in the Currie Cup, 2017 and 2018. 2018, he captained Griekwas. When they got to the playoff stages, the semi-finals of the Currie Cup, Griekwas were out of contention. And by then, Gregor Townsend, the current Scottish coach, then the Glasgow Warriors coach, had come to South Africa to watch the Cheetahs play in Bloemfontein, because the following week, Glasgow were coming out to play the Cheetahs in what was then the Pro 14, the forerunner of the URC as it is now. And having a beer after the game with a commentator, this guy said to Gregor, kind of as an off-the-cuff comment, do you know that there's a boy down the road here, a couple of hundred Ks in Kimberley, who's Scottish qualified? And that's how it happened. The next thing, the phone rang and they said, tell us more. Do you have a British passport? Yes, I do. Well, would you consider coming over and playing a trial for Scotland Sevens? So that's what he did. And then he went to Vegas and Vancouver, played Scottish Sevens. And then Glasgow Warriors had a few injuries in their back three, the wings and fullbacks. They said, come and fill in, because all rugby players in Scotland are centrally contracted by the Scottish Rugby Union. They follow the All Black model. They're centrally not franchise contracted. Said, we need a bit of backup in the back three at Glasgow. And, you know, he just grabbed those opportunities, as he has done at every stage that he stepped up, from schoolboy to varsity to Currie Cup to international sevens to the URC and now to full-blown international rugby. I mean, I think he's sitting on 22 or 23 caps around there, 11 or 12 international tries. And, you know, we're tremendously proud of him. He has just single-mindedly followed this desire to be the best rugby player that he can be. And, you know, Alec, they won the URC, beating the Bulls at Loftus. He gets to lift that trophy. He's right at the top of his game. First two games of the URC, he scores three tries and he's flying. And then he gets this clumsy blooming tackle in the air and fractures his fibula. Apparently, Gregor told him he was starting all four of these internationals in the autumn. I know he desperately wanted to play the Springboks, but, you know, professional rugby is such that you've got to take the highs with the lows. And, you know, I said, my boy, you've got to look on the bright side. The autumn internationals are really, they're important, but they're not important as important as the Six Nations. You know, there's the British Lions tour next year. And he said, I know, Dad, but I don't want to hear that now. Give me 48 hours just to deal with this disappointment. So he's sitting back in Glasgow with his wife and our granddaughter, and he is recovering from the surgery he had. And we'll see them at Christmas. The whole family is going to across to Scotland. My wife booked a little B&B in St. Andrews somewhere. And then the Glasgow-Edinburgh derby, Alec, which is a proper derby, is always played on the two Saturdays either side of Christmas. So the Glasgow one will be at Hampden Park, you know, the ground where Scottish football play their internationals, and the Edinburgh leg will be at Murrayfield. And we're probably expecting 30 to 40,000 spectators at both those games, and hopefully he'll be able to play at least one of them if his recovery goes to plan. And the whole family will be there to see it. So it's not all a downer when you get an injury like that. Yeah.
Rory Steyn, what a lovely story. And Rory, a very loyal and strong member of the Biz News tribe, bringing us up to date on the comrades, where if you followed the story, you'll know that Rory will be a very good member of that board, as well as his son Kyle, who, as mentioned, was the captain of the Glasgow Warriors when they beat the Mighty Bulls in the URC final last year. It's been such a pleasure to be with you today on the Biz News Briefing. We look forward to being back in your company again on Monday. From the team of technical producer Ruan Erasmus, our executive producer Lucy Ferreira, and yours truly, Alec Hogg, until the next time, it's cheerio and have a fabulous weekend.